Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories. They all intertwine. Memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you've done.
Sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths.
Recording in progress.
Providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And tonight, we have a special guest who's going to speak with us, and that special guest is Elizabeth Kipp from Kansas. Elizabeth is a stress management and historical trauma specialist who uses trauma-trained and yoga-informed addiction recovery coaching, ancestral clearing, compassionate inquiry, and yoga to help people with their healing. Elizabeth is a survivor of childhood abuse and healed from over 40 years of chronic pain, including anxiety, panic attacks, and addiction. Now in long-term recovery, she guides others to unleash their healing power, find freedom from suffering, and live a thriving life. She is the best-selling author of The Way Through Chronic Pain, Tools to Reclaim Your Healing Power. Everyone is invited to engage in tonight's show, and to do that, you can call us. I'll be the one who answers the phone, and you can call us at 646-595-2118. And I will answer the phone and let you in and let you comment on what our special guest is saying or ask a question. And Elizabeth, before we get started, I just want you to know we have two callers on the line. So they're listening and they will probably say something when we have a little break. And now I'll turn it over to you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Annie. It's my pleasure to be here tonight. My honor. I'll just begin with you because this is really focused on childhood abuse. I wanted to name this particular program Healing Historical, Collective, and Individual Trauma. And that's kind of interesting because that's looking at the relationship between ourselves, between our the collective, maybe our family members and the community and kind of the collective living and the collective humans living now, and also the ancestry. We're looking at those aspects. Relative to the trauma that I experienced, the childhood abuse that I experienced, I didn't know until I was much older, really in the last probably 10 or 15 years, how much the experience that I had when I was a child had also happened in my family, in my, like in my, not just my mother, but my mother saw her, saw this experience with her family. So this kind of got passed on. And if you look at the lineage, at my lineage, at least on one side, probably both sides, my mother's and my father's, because there was a, on my father's side, there was a liquor company involved. So I don't know if there was alcoholism there, but on my mother's side, there was a lot of violence. So kind of those two things together. The work I do today is focused on helping people heal their traumas, and I do it from the aspect, from these three aspects: individual, collective, and historic, through the ancestral line. My experience, beginning when I was born, my mother went into a very deep depression right after she delivered me, and I didn't see her for 9 months. So that right there is a rupture, right? That's the traumatic rupture for both mother and child. Also, I had a pyloric, I had a closed pyloric valve, and which is the little flap that opens when you swallow, when for food to go into the stomach. Mine was kind of stuck shut. So for the first 2 weeks, I wasn't able to take in food normally, and that's also traumatic. That's kind of a physical trauma. So kind of beginning with that very powerful trauma energy. That we wouldn't call that abuse in this space, but it's certainly trauma. And what is trauma? Trauma isn't so much what happens to you. It what happens inside of you because of what happens to you, and it's because you're alone with the hurt. And what happens in that space is we disconnect from our authentic self. And we can get more in that later, but I'm just giving you a little background, how scary that would be for for an infant to be born and lose all connection with the mother. Just right there, that's a big disconnection right there. My mom was an undiagnosed and untreated bipolar. She had bipolar disorder. We didn't know that till many, many years later when she was just maybe well into her past 50 years old. But in the meantime, she also was an alcoholic, and also had a habit of raging pretty much every day. And I wasn't the only one that got it. I wasn't the only one that energy got directed at. So it wasn't just me, but I knew it was going to happen to me every day. I just didn't know when or why, because it was very inconsistent. So I kind of grew up walking on eggshells in the house. My father worked, and he was pretty passive about the whole thing. So, he was a nice guy and everything, but he wasn't very good at protecting my brother and I. I have a brother 3 years older than me. My brother and I from all that emotional tirade that she went through. Then, and this is the part this is what got me very interested in coming on this show. Then when I was 15, I don't talk about this too much. This is an unusual spot for me it's the perfect spot for me to talk about it, because I don't really bring it into other podcast spaces. But when I was 15, my mom, was still drinking, and she apparently had the flu, and she was taking antibiotics. And I'm just telling you straight up, you know, we knew even back then, and that was in, we even knew then that you don't mix antibiotics with alcohol. It's a really dangerous combination. But my mom didn't really, she wasn't really somebody that went by the rules very much. So she that didn't serve her well. Anyway, she and I were in the kitchen fixing dinner. And I don't really remember what happened exactly to trigger this thing. I'm not sure anything that particularly happened. But I was at on one side of the kitchen preparing food, and she was on the other side, and all of a sudden she stopped and she rushed at me with this chopping knife that she had, the visual chopping knife, and put it right up against my neck, and I'm screaming at me, and I was pretty sure I was cooked. I was like, okay, now I'm gonna die, right? And this is gonna sound really strange, but it's the truth. I put my hands up. Kind of like I give up, kind of that kind of emotion. And I had the strangest experience. I felt this energy come right through the top of my head, down my arms and out of my hands. And that it was just kind of like this very powerful energy. And it literally put, I could see my mother get pushed back by whatever this was. And I'm just, you know, frozen in this position. But the energy, she stepped back, and she dropped the knife, and she turned around, and she kind of walked away into a corner and collapsed. So she was definitely, she was definitely under the influence of alcohol and this and bipolar disorder and this combination of antibiotics and alcohol. At the time, and this is one thing I wanted to speak to, at the time, I didn't call the police. I called my father because they were divorced at the time, and I was living with my mom. And my father was about 50 miles away, and I called him and told him what happened. And I kind of assumed he would come get me. I just like, you know, I'm freaked out, and I felt like I was in danger. And he said, and it's 8 o'clock at night or something, 7:30. And he said, stay there for the night, and then when you get up in the morning, pack a bag like you're coming home for the weekend and drive home to him. And I was old enough at that. I know I was 15, but in Delaware, you can get a, at that time, you could get a, I was living in Delaware, you can get a driver's license, a learner's permit, driver's license kind of thing at 15. Anyway, so I was stunned because I felt like I've got to do this all by myself. and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to get home okay. Anyway, I didn't know what was going to happen with my mom. It seemed like she was kind of sleeping it off. Somehow I got through the night. I don't think I slept much. But I did pack a bag. I told my mother I was going, and the next morning I told my mother I was going to go home for the weekend, and I somehow got in that car and drove 50 miles from Philadelphia to Wilmington. And I don't know how I did it. It took every fiber in my being to pull myself together enough to drive, like safely. And so remember I said trauma is not what happens to you, it's what happens inside of you because of what happens to you. I just described what was happening to me. I felt abandoned. I felt alone. I felt like I'm going to have to get myself through this. And I was alone with the hurt. Anyway, I did get home. And I remember I got out of the car. I walked in the front door. My dad was upstairs. And he didn't come down to see me. I went up to see him, and he said, "Are you okay?" Which was like, "Are you physically okay?" was what he meant. And I said, "Yeah." And he said, and then he got on the phone, and he called my mom and said she's not, you know, she lives and not coming back. And there was kind of a, I could hear her screaming on the other end of the line. And then he hung up. And that was the last my dad said anything about the whole thing. And I had a brother and three stepsisters at the time and a stepmother. And they never said anything. And this is another thing I wanted to talk about. I didn't get any support around that. I didn't have any support except I kind of did my own psychology, my own kind of inner work, because I knew I had these different parts of me that were upset, and I ended up doing what today would be called parts work. This would kin to Richard Schwartz's internal family systems parts work. I kind of ended up doing, like, a 15-year-old made-up version of that, where I kind of addressed the different parts of me that were, well, wow, you're really courageous, and oh my God, I'm so scared, and what just happened, and my mother wanted to kill me, and if my mom wants to kill me, I must really be a horrible, if my mother wants to take me off the planet, I must really be a horrible person. So there was like, and I'm not getting any support, and now what do I do? And so you see all the different voices that were happening at the time, and I somehow had to make peace with all of that. And that, and hence, I kind of came up with the strategy of talking to, taking little parts of me and talking to each one at a time, kind of thing. So that was my experience. I also had a physical injury the year before. I'd fallen off a horse and laid on a rock and split my fifth lumbar vertebrae in two, and it broke front to back. So the front part of it was kind of sitting in my pelvis, pulling the leg nerves with it. And it hurt, but I didn't, I'd already been under so much pressure from the screaming and yelling all the time that I really wasn't, it just didn't register as physical pain enough for me to realize I'd really hurt myself that much. I mean, it hurt. I could walk away, so I didn't think I'd hurt myself that much. And it took 7 years for that injury to kind of compound for me to even get an x-ray for it. But the thing is that injury never really healed. I had a lot of surgery to stabilize that slip, and I went into many, many years of chronic pain. That's what my book is about, is the chronic pain situation and kind of how to heal that. And the thing is that the doctors were like, they were just kind of assumed I wasn't going to heal. And I felt, they weren't asking the question, why isn't Elizabeth healing? Because I think if they had, instead of assuming that I wasn't going to heal, if they'd asked the question, why isn't Elizabeth healing, they might have been able to look at the deeper issues, which was like not feeling enough, being, yelled at and abandoned, and all this stuff, this emotional stuff that I went through as a young person. And that has an effect on the nervous system. Now, I'm a chronic pain management specialist as part of what I do. And what is chronic pain versus acute pain? Chronic pain is any pain that's felt 15 days out of 30 for 3 months or more. Any pain, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, it all sends the same signal to the brain. It hurts. Chronic pain and acute pain, we have a stress response that's a response to threat that we have in the system, in our body, in our physiology. And in acute pain, it goes into the on position, the threat gets dealt with, and then it goes into the off position. So we have an injury and we're all activated. We take care of the injury. The injury heals. That stress response goes back into the off position. In chronic pain, the stress response gets stuck in the on position, and it stays there, right? It's stuck. So that creates a lot of chronic stress and a whole kind of physiology of stress and strain in the body, in the physiology, and we don't do well with that. That creates disease. This is another reason why I wanted to come in here. National Association of Adult Child Survivors of Child Abuse is because if we don't handle the chronic pain, if we're under chronic stress, if we've got a stress response stuck in the on position, that is going to create problems with us on down the line. And when we live life where we've got this unresolved trauma from the abuse that we've experienced, when it's unresolved in the system, it compounds and we end up getting, you know, we have disease problems. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell. Annie, would you like to ask a question, or do we have a caller that has a question?
Yes. I want to say that I identify with some points of your story, so we should be friends. And we do have two callers on the line, and I haven't talked to them yet. I think this one is Philip. Let me open him up.
Hello, Annie.
Hello, Philip. Is this you?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Are you there, Philip?
Can you hear me?
I guess that's the wrong number. Who is calling us, please, from 661 area code?
That's me. That's Philip.
Hello?
Hello?
Well, I can hear Philip.
I can hear Philip.
Oh, you can. Mm-hmm. I wonder why I can't. Well, why don't you and Philip speak?
Okay, very good. Good evening, Philip. How are you?
Hello, it's Elizabeth Wright. I'm good.
What would you like to ask
question.
Or comment about?
How would you turn off that chronic stress switch? Because I think I'm stuck in the on position.
Great question.
Love it. It's something I do. I work with people all the time. I'm gonna mute now and answer the question.
Okay.
So the question was, Phyllis asked, how do you turn the stress response to the off position? And that's the work that I do, and that's the work I've actually done it for myself, and that's the work I do with clients. So let's begin with an understanding of the healing of, with an understanding of the hierarchy of healing. We have to start with the nervous system first. Then we work with a sense of, so we work with the nervous system to get it regulated first. Because when we're in chronic stress, that stress response in the on position, we're dysregulated and we're hypervigilant and we're, you know, that's called dysregulated. So we want to bring regulation into the nervous system. Then we can connect back into ourselves and we can connect to others. We connect maybe to a higher power. And then we can learn. So when we get activated and we feel like we're under threat, the part of the brain that is the oldest part of the brain, so the reptilian, is called the amygdala, the fear center in the brain, it gets activated and it kind of it's got a priority in the brain. Our thinking mind doesn't operate so well there. It doesn't get completely shut off, but it gets shut off a lot. So there are options are fight in this activated state, fight, run, shut down, appease, maybe, people please, that kind of thing, freeze. Those are our options. We don't really have any other options at that point. So we want to first work with the nervous system. Now, how do we do that?
Well, where I like to start
is with the breath. There's a profound and powerful connection between the brain and a long exhale. It's all mediated through the 10th cranial nerve, the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve goes into the face, the ears, the throat, down into the lungs and heart, and down into all the organs. It was really cool because understanding how this works is why the breath is so important. So I said there's this powerful connection between the long exhale in the brain and the breath. This long exhale tells the nervous system that it's safe.
Philip, are you still on the line?
I don't think Philip is still here. He seems to have dropped out.
Okay.
Well, is there someone else on the line?
Not at this time, but this is a good opportunity to give the phone number so that other people can call and be on our panel, ask questions, tell parts of their own story. The phone number is 646-595-2118. I'll repeat that, 646-595-2118. And now we do have another caller. I'm going to open the microphone. Welcome,
hey.
Caller from 614 area code. Who's speaking, please?
This is Bob Eden, the regional ambassador for Australia for NASCAR.
Good evening, Aiden.
Yeah, it's just after 10:30, and yeah, really love what you were sharing, Elizabeth. Resonates so much. For me, how can I put it? Yeah, by healing the wounds of my childhood back in the 90s with the help of John Bradshaw, and my mum was my primary abuser, and she was a volcano too. So, yeah, I never knew when I was going to get, or got hit, whether I was good, you know, behaving good or bad anyway. But by healing the wounds of my childhood and reclaiming the belief in me, which was beaten out of me when I was about 4.5 years old, was a major step forward. But the work I did with mum, basically, I just wrote her a letter and said, this is my story of me growing up as a child in our family. Please tell me yours. And it was a horrific. There were pages and pages of, you know, all the terrors I could remember, because I was at that stage in my life where, God, I hate your mum, you're always beating me, but you got to love your mum, and it was that dichotomy that was tearing me apart. But once I'd heard her story, I could move from hate through understanding, because she had a very violent childhood, back to love. And then I phoned her about 3 days later after I got that letter, and yeah, that's the first time we spoke as mother and son, and she's in England, I'm in Australia, we're crying our eyes out. And then 3 days later, she died. There's a caveat to mum's story. Probably about 10 years ago, I contacted mum through a spiritual medium, and this lady told me stuff only mum and I knew, you know, so I knew this medium was fair dinkum or genuine. And mum told me then, she just said, thank you so much, Bobby, for writing that letter, because I'm now doing the same work with my parents in the beyond. And that actually blew me away. But I'll just make one more statement, is I've come to realize now that I am living in a society that actually produces wounded children. And to explain that, one of the most horrific times in my childhood was when I was abandoned. And it's that abandonment, that was such a horrific wound. And then when I look at society today and compare it to tribal times or even tribal cultures today, like when a child is born into a tribe, mum and dad, they go out in the field, they take the child with them. And wherever they go, they take the child with them. And now we live in a society where the parents hand over the children to the state as early as 3.5, 4 years old. And so, you know, what I'm proclaiming, I suppose, this is just, you know, my observation, is that I cannot imagine a child in any Western family, growing up in any Western family, that's had all their emotional developmental needs met. And, I love the way people are spreading the word, you know. It's we are making a difference by sharing our stories, aren't we?
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Aidan. That's astonishing, remarkable, and what a blessing that you were able to reconcile with your mom. My mother was passed before I was able to get to that stage, and what I came to learn ultimately was that, and maybe you relate to this, she was my teacher of compassion, because I was able to get beyond my hurt and understand how traumatized she had been. So that was helpful for me. And I do this ancestral clearing work, and I'll do it for the group in a little bit, but that was very helpful for me as well. And the tribal thing, yeah, this is why I do historical trauma work and work in the collective. And because in the Western world, we don't live in the tribal tradition anymore, and it's really creating a problem. So I'm really glad you brought that in. Did you want to add anything else?
Muted. Yes, I'd love to, but I was muted. How can I put it? I think one of the biggest steps forward I made in my life was probably about, I'm 71 now, and in 2005 I became a ship's captain and realized that, hey, you know, the buck stops with you, Bob. You're responsible for the lives and safety of these people and even the vibe on the boat. And at that time, I just applied that ideology to my whole life. Yes, I am master and commander of this life that I do create, and I take full responsibility for it. And so now I can't blame anybody for anything, because, you know, I am actually creating my life, and every event that I create in my life holds a lesson. And mm-hmm. also the other thing that I've learned is that my body is so much smarter than me. It always knows what it needs. It's always sending me messages. All I have to do is listen and obey. And, I'm living an awesome life. I'm battling with prostate cancer at the moment, but it's almost a joyful journey because I'm learning even more about me. So, yeah.
Wow, amazing.
Life is good, eh? Are you on Facebook, Elizabeth?
Oh, yes. You can find me on Facebook, Elizabeth Kipp. Yep.
Yeah, I'll send you a friend request.
Yeah, in Lawrence,
okay.
Kansas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can find me on Elizabeth Kipp Stress Management on my business page, or on my personal page is Elizabeth Kipp. I'm out of Lawrence, Kansas. Yeah, great. Thank you so much,
okay.
Aidan. It's just been great talking with you. I think we're going to move right into the ancestral clearing piece of this because you brought in the work that you're that your mom, this connection between your spiritual person and your mom, this connection is very important. So thank you so much for bringing that in. Annie, is there anyone else on the line right now? I'd like to get into the answer to the question, but I'd also like to answer a question.
Yes, Philip is back on. I'll open his mic. Hi, Philip.
Would you like to ask a question or say something?
For some reason, I got cut off because it just stopped. Like, I couldn't hear anything at all. So I'm back.
Okay, did you hear the breathing exercise that I did?
I've been doing meditating. Does that count?
Well, meditating is great. And, yes, meditating is very helpful. And the breath work is where I wanted you to go. Long, deep breathing. So that's going to send a signal to the nervous system that you're that it's safe. Remember, there's a connection between the brain and a long exhale. So I took the group through about a minute, which would be nice if we'd done the three minutes or 11 minutes, but I don't want to take the radio time. Where I did a breath work where we did to a count of four, an inhale to a count of four, one, two, three, four, and then the exhale to a count of six, one, two, three, four, five, six, so that exhale is a little bit longer than the inhale. The inhale is slow, and the exhale is a little bit slower, a little bit longer. I'd like you to try that for 3 minutes, work your way up to 11 minutes, see how, and add that into the time that you do meditation, add that in at the beginning, and you'll see you might have an easier meditation practice, but it'll shift your nervous system. You'll retrain your nervous system to be calmer. Give that a try.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello?
Annie, can you hear me?
Can anybody hear me? Oh, I guess Annie's gone now.
Pardon me?
Maybe Annie's having problems with the line now.
Annie might be having problems. Maybe she is. I don't know. All right, I'm just going to go ahead and do the ancestor calling more. Thanks. Can you hear me?
Elizabeth, I'm back.
Okay, great.
Sorry about that.
Do we have anyone else on the line? Talk to Philip and Aiden.
Yes, those are the two people that we have, and me. And I want to hear more about ancestral clearing.
Okay, awesome. All right, I'm gonna get into that now.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Okay, so take a nice big breath in and let it out and notice how that feels.
How was that for you,
Annie?
It was moving. It was meaningful. Some of it I couldn't do. It was like I was being asked to, I'm not sure exactly, but like say forgive my mom. And I couldn't do that. I don't do that, you know. So some of the things I was like stopped, and then I had to catch up with you. I was wondering if you normally do it that fast, or is it the kind of thing that you pause after each sentence?
Well, that kind of depends on
the person. That depends on the person and the time. I normally do that at a fair clip the first time through because that's a general clearing, and we're not really trying to engage we're not trying to engage the mind so much as we are the heart. I think Aiden said earlier, the body is so smart, right? So we kind of let the words kind of wash over. Now, you know what? If you're not ready to forgive your mother, then you're not ready to release that. It's what we're asking Creator to come in and release that which no longer serves us, and it may serve you to actually still hang on to some stuff around your mom. I don't really know. That'd be something that we could do in a private session. But I love the feedback. I've actually never heard anybody ask for us to slow down on that one before. But that's okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Is there anyone else on the line?
There's not. It's just you and I. However, we have more than 25 minutes left. So I'm going to give the phone number if anyone would like to call in and comment on what Elizabeth Kipp has said or ask questions or just talk about your own experience. The phone number is 646-595-2118. Again, 646-595-2118. And I'll be the guy that answers and lets you into the show.
That's great.
That's great.
Thanks so much, Annie.
I'm not sure where else to go at this point.
I could talk a little bit about the collective trauma.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be a...
So let's just drop into the quantum field again.
In the quantum field, the quantum physicists tell us that we can access past, present, and future all at once. Another thing is that we're all connected. There's this thing called entanglement. We're all connected. We may not feel it. That's a part of the human condition, is this sense of separation that we get. But we're all, in terms of the energy, we're all connected in the field called the unified field. It's interesting. Let's see. I'll give you an example. Try to give you an example of the collective field of the being connected to everything. So we're, just as an example, we're connected into the energy of the celestial bodies, the moon and the sun. The moon, for instance, we're subject to the full moon, the new moon, the movement of the tides. We're all connected into that pulse of life. And one of the things that happens for humans is the human female who's in reproductive age has a moon cycle. And even women who are past reproductive age still have that same feel the effect of the moon cycle later. It doesn't physically manifest the same way, but you can still feel it energetically. So we're affected by the collective of the energy of the celestial bodies to that degree, that just in the moon, just the energy of the moon alone is an example. Another example of the collective energy would be the experience of 9/11. I was actually in Kansas when that happened, and happened to be on the road on my way back from town to my house, which is in the country, and I happened to look up in the sky, and you could see the contrails from the airplane contrails. They weren't straight. They had turned around. And I'd never seen that before, and I wondered what the heck had happened. And I knew something had happened. Anyway, we got home and, you know, turned on the TV right away because I knew something had happened. The thing is we all felt the effect of that were very intense in the United States and also felt around the world. So as a collective humans, we felt that experience. Some of us may have been affected more than others, but it definitely hit our energetic field, I'll put it that way. So that's another example of the collective. Now, recently in the United States, we had an eclipse. It came up through Mexico into Texas and across, where I am, and it was about 90%. Totality, but went up into Newfoundland and onward. So, but that eclipse energy, a lot of people, at least in my world, were feeling, having, you know, deep dreams, and they were having, getting connected to levels of levels of themselves being able to kind of reach before, and there was kind of a supposed to be a lot of chaotic energy in the system for about a week before, and a little bit and another week after. It's been about a week after, so it's been kind of around that eclipse energy. There was kind of a lot going on in the field. So I don't know if any of you felt that, but those are kind of some examples.
So when
I have a day where I'm feeling a little bit, I'm fairly calm most of the time, but when I have a restless night or my dreams get in, I've had some right around the eclipse time. I had a kind of a series of a pretty intense. Almost nightmare kind of things, which is unusual for me. I kind of was like, okay, I have my own stuff that I'm processing my own stuff, but I'm also part of my community and I'm also part of the collective. So we don't exist in a vacuum. And we're also connected in, remember, through the quantum field into the past, into the lineage. So we've got a lot happening all at once. And, you know, our sense of separation, that we're separate from one another, is really an illusion, because we're in this nested field of past, present, and future from the quantum viewpoint. We're in a collective. We have a community that we're in. We have a family that we're in. And then we've got our individual self. So, but it's a nested, there's circles like a little Russian doll, like they're nested circles within, spheres within spheres within spheres. So kind of understanding, I feel like I've got a lot more compassion for myself and for other people when I understand the influences that we're all under at any given time. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what I have to say about the collective experience.
Thank you.
I want to share that I was able to see the complete, you know, the total eclipse. I went up to Syracuse, New York to do that. And seeing the eclipse, it gave me a feeling of bliss. I just was looking at it, and a smile spread over my face, and I just felt so much joy. And I think part of it was because everybody else, I was in the ball stadium, and everyone else in the stadium was oohing and aahing, feeling the same joy as me, the collective experience of it. And I was with one of my children, my grown sons, and he held my hand when it went full. So that was really special.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. The thing that was really cool about the eclipse, you know, we've been such a divided, polarized society, really, at least in the United States, these last so many years. And I felt like the eclipse was a time where we all came together under one common thing. And I was really grateful for that. Did you experience that? You were talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to think that people all over the country were experiencing the same thing I was. It's very special.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
And I'm very much influenced by the moon, even though I'm post-menopause. When it's a full moon, I stay up. I can't sleep well, and I'm like full of energy, and I clean, and I never clean. But that happens to me. The moon makes me do that. Makes me manic, I think.
Well, I have difficulty, or my sleep is definitely affected by the moon. Even at my age, I'm well past reproductive age. Doesn't matter. I'm still affected by it. I don't get quite at that level of intensity, but my sleep is definitely compromised, and I'm just like, what's happening? And I'm, oh, it's the full moon. I don't know what's happening, right? So, We don't live in a vacuum. We live in a field, and there's a lot happening. There's a man named Richard Rohr, who's a beautiful Christian soul teacher. And he talked about this entanglement thing, and I loved how he put it, because he was like, let's be conscious about our thoughts, because hate over here creates hate, it connects to hate over there, love over here connects to love over there. So because we're all entangled, what's happening over here in the United States is felt over in Australia. That's just kind of an example, we're all entangled in this energetic field. So we have to be careful about the energy that I'm putting into the field. I try and be careful to be responsible. I think Aiden earlier talked about taking full responsibility for his experience, and I agree with that, and I'm saying I try and take 100% responsibility for what I'm putting into the field of consciousness because we're all connected and it matters. So one of my prayers in the morning is, please help me see clearly, hear clearly, and let all the words that I speak today come through an open heart, so that that's coming through that energy. And then I kind of add on there, any mistakes I make, please let them not hurt me or anyone else. That's how I deal with that. Would you like to share a little bit about the connection we have with our childhood story?
Your story about being separated from your mother by mental illness, I resonate with that. When I was born, my mom had pneumonia, and so the nurses didn't want me to cry and wake her up, so they put me in the hallway. This was back in the 50s. They put me in the hallway so I wouldn't cry too loud and wake her up. And, of course, I caught every germ that there was in that hospital, including a staph infection. And the staph infection gave me boils, ugly, horrible boils all over my body, so I wasn't a very appealing baby. And then when I went home, I gave it to everyone. I gave it to my brothers and sisters and my grandparents and my cousins. Everybody got these boils, and boy, did they hate me. I was really the pariah because of that. Eventually, they seemed to get over it. I was a pretty nice kid, you know, I think maybe that's why. But it was a rough start for me.
My goodness, I can't even imagine how difficult that must have been, and the work that you probably had to do to clear the imprint of all of that.
Yeah. Yes, I've been doing recovery work for about, I think, 15 years now. And I could never talk about that kind of thing in the past, but now I can. And I don't even feel, you know, any horror anymore. It's just matter of fact now.
Well, when we saw these truths, especially the ones that are uncomfortable and really finally want to hear stuff like that. I know, I was raised in a family, it was like, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything. And all the unpleasant stuff was pushed under the rug. But you see, that's not doing anything to help anybody heal. That's the problem. And that's why I appreciate organizations like this and other organizations that work with and places, you know, spaces that work on healing trauma. Because
if we don't address it, it's just going to keep festering and pass it on. How are we doing with the lines? We are the only ones on at this moment. I think people were having trouble because they seem to call in and drop off and call in and drop off quite a few times. And so I think, yeah. But right now it's just you and me. So let me look at my notes again. Oh, yeah, another thing we had in common, my mother was a rager. She raged every day at everyone. And I especially got a lot of it, I think, because I was a quiet person, and I would just stand there and take it, and others would fight back a little bit. I never fought back. But my dad didn't protect anyone from that. So that was awful. It was an awful kind of abuse.
The only tool I had was, you know, what came into my ancestors, and I'll tell you one of the tools that saved me, and I always felt that I was blessed with this because I didn't think about it, it was just there. So I would get in trouble, and I would turn to gratitude. I would just say, yes, the things happening, and the food, the water, and clothes to wear, food to eat, and all that kind of stuff. And that was really helpful for me. It was like this way of balancing, or it also helped me deflect from the pain of it, so it served that purpose as well. So it was kind of a way to help myself stay as safe as I felt that I could. Did you have anything like that that you used to help you through all that?
Yes. I dissociated a lot, and it's something that I still do sometimes. It's just sort of a reaction that I don't control. But I used to dissociate a lot just to escape where I was and be in another place. And I even went so far as to become mentally ill. And what happened was I completely forgot. My father sexually abused me, and I had a breakdown when I was in the fifth grade, and I couldn't go to school for a year. And by the end of that year, I had completely forgotten about the sexual abuse. Weird.
I think the DSM-5 is a diagnostic manual that clinicians have to use in order to bill their insurance and stuff like that. They got to pay their patients on some category. And if you look at it from a kind of trauma lens, there's a lot of different categories, different ways people are using to keep themselves safe in a world that we perceive under threat. So just something to think about. We have a question from Kim who says, Elizabeth, if a child has a ruptured appendage and then lives, and then grows up to have a daughter, Was a durable time with her deliveries?
Could that be from
the mom's
trauma?
Well, that's very
interesting.
I can't actually, from an ancestor clearing point, first of all,
not a doctor, can't make that call.
And from an ancestor clearing point of view, the appendix is part of the immune system. So we'd be looking at boundary issues from an ancestor perspective, not a diagnostic, I'm not doing that, I'm just saying our perspective would be looking at the immune system, which is kind of the boundary issues spiritually looking at that. And then difficulty with deliveries, talking about womb issues, that would be sexual hurts and wrongs at times, the infant took on energy from the mother, which is very difficult to not do because you're stewing in their juices, where it's stewing our mother's juices while we're in the womb. So we would just be clearing for all sexual hurts and wrongs in the lineage. Please help you all forgive each other, help you all forgive yourself for all that happened, any limiting beliefs, judgments, and conclusions about it, any letdown because it's happened. Please help you all forgive each other, help you all forgive yourself. Please and thank you. The appendix part would be, I don't know about the connection between a rupture of the appendix and lived, and then has a daughter that has, I don't really necessarily see a connection for that. A private session, I don't really like to look at that way. We might see a connection if we work the process, because I can't actually do that in this format, but we have processes that we use that can help us actually a pinpoint the root of the world started. So, from the appendix thing, we would clear around any kind of boundaries were violated, not honored, overrun, times we didn't stand up for ourselves, or gotten in trouble when we did, and there were repercussions that kind of thing. Please help you all forgive each other, help you all forgive yourself. Thank you. Very interesting question. I haven't actually had that question before. And what I've noticed, and I'm not making a claim here that'll never happen, but what I've noticed is the work I've done in ancestor clearing, I have yet to have a client come into the process of asking with an issue that ancestor clearing is going to be able to address from its angle. So that's kind of interesting. I'm just not sure what the connection here is between a rupture of appendix and difficulties with delivering children. It seems there probably connected, but I'm not seeing it in this moment. And actually, at this point, since you're on, what I'd like to know is where do you feel that in your body when you think about it? That would be a way that we could get at it. Do you feel that anywhere when you ask that question?
I did have trouble getting pregnant with her. With my second daughter, the first one I was really young, and I was, I guess, you know, but I had some rupture of appendix, what we found out when I was trying to get pregnant with my second one, that one of my most loved ones was at least just mangled. And, okay. So that's, so that's, that's, and I know for me, I guess, because I don't know, that has been a question for me for a little bit. Could that have evolved?
Identification in case we are. This has been Stop Child Abuse Now, Scan Radio Show number 3410, brought to you by NASCA, the National Association for Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. Thank you and good night.
The recording stopped. I had to go ahead and stop it, but because I did want to talk to you and